Exquisite Podcast. I'm your host, Carla, and this is episode number 2, My Teacher Doesn't Look Like Me. This show is about highlighting aspects of life hidden from us, and the first place to start is a school. Considering this is where our children spend the most time, and this is where we spent the most time when we were children. Now, obviously, America is culturally diverse. And unfortunately, children don't always have a teacher with whom they can identify with on an ethnic level, which does have a heavy bearing on how that student understands themselves, perceives things, hence why I use the word identify, keyword there. So now I'm getting to the part of the show where I want you to stop what you're doing and check out the She Blows It podcast page on Instagram at SheBlowsIt_pod. I'll mix it up every once in a while with the live show on Blog Talk Radio, so stay tuned to the Instagram page for details on when those shows will be airing and available. I'll give out a dial-in number, and you guys can just call in, talk to me, and be a part of the show. In the meantime, the weekly episodes are available on multiple platforms, which include Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker Podcast, and Radio Public. So let's do a little recap here, and let's tie it into this episode, My Teacher Doesn't Look Like Me. So in the last episode, you all joined me in a discussion about how socioeconomic status impacts quality of education, and where there's high socioeconomic status, there's more resources, and where there's low socioeconomic status, there are fewer resources. We also discussed curriculum and how the districts are putting together their own curriculum based on state guidelines, which is an outlier to what's really being taught. If you don't know the history, or if you're unwilling to teach the true history of our nation and how it functions, then why bother? We also talked about contributions to schools. The amount of contributions schools get make the schools reputable, not the curriculum. As we said in the last episode, and pertaining specifically to the state of Florida guidelines, which they follow to a T, and I know this because my son is in third grade, and of course, I looked there, and I was able to connect the dots between the district website, the state guidelines, and everything he was learning over the semesters. And now I know what he'll be learning for the remainder of the school year based on the Florida state guidelines. Now let's go back to curriculum and the districts putting together the curriculum based on the state guidelines. I also said if you're unwilling to teach the true history of our nation and how it functions, then why bother? I want to tell you guys a story. So this semester, I listened to my son's teacher interact with him, and she's completely amazing. But I noticed during Black History Month that when speaking on like what really happened to Martin Luther King and why he was assassinated, that the conversation got a little uncomfortable. And I can tell by the way, like, she answered the questions, how her tone changed. It was just obvious that it was uncomfortable. And I never asked her, but I could imagine, like, if another student said something off the wall about Black people, then what kind of situation would that put her in? Like, she would be put in a very complicated situation, because then she would have to figure out a way to explain what really happened without, you know, offending other students and parents, because school is now also remote and you can hear everything that's going on in class unless your kid has headphones plugged in. But I like to keep my son's headphones out because, you know, I kind of want to know what's going on. But yeah, and another thing is, another point that I want to bring up is tying it back into being able to identify, you know, why are you having those feelings of uncomfortability? How can you teach a history you can't relate to? Unless you've lived like a journalist before you became a teacher and lived like the people, like, you know, you see those shows where people live in villages and they learn the ways of the villages. They learn the methods of respect, what is considered respect in those villages. So unless you're living your life like that and you're able to see what their experiences are and learn the true history, then how can that be effective learning for students? How can they connect if you don't even know? If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Go sharing my research with you guys. The links will be in the description box from where I got my information and research from. So if you want to read along too or just get some more in-depth information, then feel free to click on these links and check these websites out, because that's what I'm basing all of this information on. I have a lot of theories on things, so check my sources type vibe. Back to teacher connections and identifying with their minority students. It's like, what factors prevent them from doing so? I don't freaking know. So that's why I did some research, right? And as I was reading on this website, it's on chalkbeat.org, and I read an article about an educator, and she started out when she was like 22, young educator. She had, you know, just gotten her undergraduate degree and immediately began working as a teacher with no experience. She started working in urban communities, and she was clueless, no training. She talked about how she grew up around the best of the best. She talked about her friends and how they had the best of the best and how they never talked about race at all. She mentioned how her family never even talked about race. And you know what my favorite question is? My favorite question is why and how. That goes back to the last episode where race is erased. And the issues that arise from race are in fact erased as well. And in a sense, she had to erase her own identity as well, because she started to feel like, okay, it's unprofessional for me to tell other students about my culture and who I am, you know, and it closes the door for her as well, you know, for them to open up to her about her culture so that she can understand. Because if there's no transparency and if you're not open, then you can't connect with each other and let each other know what's up. It was interesting because the article took a turn on how the school functions as a business. And again, on the last episode, we went in on this and we talked about how politics is integrated into the public school system, which goes hand in hand because politics is a business. Do y'all remember going into class and seeing the do now assignments on the board? And then there was a timer set for those do now assignments. You know, usually teachers will put it like in the far left hand corner or the far right hand corner, do now. And then there's like a list of things that you need to just unpack and do. Well, she brought back memories because I was attending school during the No Child Left Behind Act. And I remember that. And she brought that up, and she just talked about how, you know, when you're just talking at your students or just simply telling them what to do and demanding respect, that you don't get respect like that. And students don't learn from that, because their learning is contingent upon their connection with their teacher. There are a lot of students who don't like their teacher, and because they don't like their teacher, that's why they have that poor grade in that class, you know? Or there are some students who feel like they're being treated unfairly, and those are the ones that'll be like, oh, I hate that class. And it's because of those reasons too. So anyways, back to who she is. Go read the article to fully understand what I'm talking about. But this is just an example to support the claim of teachers connecting with their minority students and how they either do or they don't. So in this case, we have a teacher who at a certain period in time in her career didn't. So I thought to myself, okay, she's from a middle class, highly educated family, and you mean to tell me that she doesn't have a family legacy? So this is me looking at it from a different perspective. So you mean to tell me that she never learned about her grandparents, her great-grandparents, or great. No race thing. This is an everybody thing. This is a everyone needs to figure out what is going on. And the only way we're going to figure out what is going on, not only, you know, in social aspects of life, but like all around. And I want to share something with you because I have time. So I went back to Chalkbeat, and remember I was talking about how it was a little uncomfortable for my son's teacher to talk about certain things pertaining Black history, which I get it. And I get it even more so. The link is in the description. This article was written by Sarah Fine, the teacher that I was describing, who stated that she couldn't initially connect with her minority students. But she said, and I quote, "I had a textbook case of what author Robin DiAngelo has called white fragility." Have you guys ever heard of that before? That was new for me. If you guys have heard of it before, then you already know what's up. But if you've never heard of white fragility before, it's defined as, and I quote, "the combination of defensiveness, guilt, and silence that many white people exhibit when faced with questions about race and racism." That's pretty deep. And I think that that's big of her to say, because a lot of teachers aren't speaking up about this. In another article, what's the name of that article? Another article that I was reading on Harvard Graduate School of Education's magazine. This article is called "Where Are All the Teachers of Color?" And it talks about how you have the public school system set up. You have 50% of your school system is non-white. And then you have 80% of the public school teachers are white. So there goes your disconnect there in connections. And if it's not a teacher who is willing to open up and channel those connections, then it's useless. There won't be any understanding. But my question to you all, and my question that I want everyone to ponder, is, do you think that there will ever be a true and genuine understanding? Do you think that that bridge will ever be gapped with understanding? In the article, one of the writers, there were a multitude of writers in this article. This article is by Josh Moss. And Estefania Rodriguez is someone who is highlighted in the article. And she said, all teachers are white. And that's what she believed as a kid when she was going to school in Connecticut. Her family is from Colombia. They fled from the violence in their native country or whatever. And then they settled here. And then she really got heavy into reading and writing because she was always going to the library with her mom or whatever. But she stated that, and I quote, in public schools today, minority students are, well, it's probably time to stop referring to them as minority. Now, when I read that, I was like, you know what? Facts. And then she goes back into the statistics of the 50% of the public school is non-white and 80% of the teachers are white. And then she goes on to say that for starters, and this is, and I quote this, for starters, a Center for American Progress study titled America's Leaky Pipeline for Teachers of America's Leaky Pipeline for Teachers of Color report that minority teachers have higher expectations of minority students, provide culturally relevant teaching, develop trusting relationships with students, confront issues of racism through teaching, and become advocates and cultural brokers. You know what? I'm gonna just leave that right there. Seasons theme is about what we didn't learn in school. I made it a point to engage with some of my followers on Instagram, right? And the question, the poll question was, did you learn how to write a check in middle school or high school? 20% said yes, 80% said no. So as I said, all that algebra, geometry, calculus, trig did not teach most of us how to write a check. I had a follower who said her mom taught her how to write a check. And then one of my followers actually said he learned how to write a check in school, which we got to talk more about that. I want to know more about what time, what period, and what like era he went to school in where they taught him how to write a check, or you know, if he went to a private school, if that made a difference in like what he learned, because there will be an episode coming up on just making comparisons to private school versus public school and what that looks like as far as curriculum wise. Because from what I've read about private schools is that they kind of, you know, do their own thing. And it's usually like faith centered or centered around some type of principle or ideology. So I would love to know like what that curriculum looks like too. So now I'm going to go digging for some private school curriculum. But I thought I would share that poll because it just goes to show a lot of things we didn't learn from school, a lot of things we learned from life experience, a lot of things we learned from our parents, not necessarily, you know, in a classroom. I hope that with drawing comparisons to where it is that teachers are unable to identify with students and how students can't identify with teachers gave you guys something to think about. Now to shift gears a little bit, another thing we didn't learn in school that we discussed in the last episode, and I know I keep referencing the last episode because all of this information is just like intertwined, but we also talked about emotional intelligence And that is definitely something we didn't learn in school. But I put together a piece and narrated somewhat of a story about like our level of emotional intelligence and how to view emotional intelligence through the lenses of a misfit. I make a comparison between the beautiful prison and the ugly redemption. So before we end the show, I want to share this story with you. Listen to this. You choose to live in a beautiful prison or the ugly redemption? I'll say that again for you guys, because you guys might be looking like, what? The question is, do you choose to live in a beautiful prison or the ugly redemption? A beautiful prison, metaphorically, if you think about it, could represent anything. Let's start with the terminology in itself, beautiful prison. First of all, that is so oxymoronic. We know that. Metaphorically, a beautiful prison is a castle surrounded by a barbed wire gate. Inside this castle is everything you could possibly imagine. You have the most expensive china, the most beautiful living room sets, television sets, authentic sheets made from somewhere that we don't even know how to pronounce. Money flourishing everywhere. However, you can't go outside of those barbed wires. You can get Amazon to mail you as many commodities and necessities as you need. You can accept packages. Now, you may not eat, you don't need to eat jail food. However, you eat the food that's there. It'll be food that you like, but you'll probably be eating it all the time, getting bored of it. But you're in a beautiful palace, and everything around you is magnificent and grand. The ugly redemption. This is when it really hits home for that beautiful prison where most of us have or are complacent. This becomes a culture shock. This becomes where the truth meets reality. This becomes snapping back to reality and realizing that I don't care how embellished this prison is on the inside, how beautiful it looks on the outside, and how it looks like I'm so protected. I am not protected. I am trapped. So, when you look at both of those ideas married, they cancel each other out. You can't marry these ideas. You're either in the beautiful prison or you're in the ugly redemption. Now, it may be possible that you have one foot hanging in the beautiful prison, one foot hanging in the ugly redemption, where you gain back your independence, your freedom, everything that you've lost out on being stuck in the beautiful prison and trapped and embellished beautiful findings, rare art and rare clothing from Paris that no one has ever worn before. It is possible to be torn between the two, but at one point or another, you gotta pick. Now, the beautiful prison could be metaphoric for your mentality. It could be metaphoric for a relationship. It could be metaphoric for financial reasons. Whatever beautiful prison you may be living in or have lived in, most likely fell under those brackets and just dealing with things that happen and transpire in life in general. Now, when we look at the ugly redemption is a very solid reality. It's a very curt reality. And again, is where truth meets reality. When you find the means to break out of the beautiful prison and you make it into the ugly redemption, you realize that life will no longer be the way it was. You may not have certain luxuries. You may not have someone bring you coffee every morning. You may not have daisies and daffodils freshly cut and brought into your room every day. Like, it just won't be peaches and cream. The ugly redemption is buckling down and realizing, listen, get your ish together, own your ish, deal with it, and move forward. And moving forward is the hard part. It's like getting a train to move smoothly down the train tracks. Like, when have you ever seen a train just cut on and just go, like, just take off? You don't see that. They turn the train on, they warm it up, they check for, you know, any engine issues, they check and make sure that it's on the tracks properly. They count the passengers to make sure that they're not exceeding the maximum capacity on the train, which who knows what that is now due to, you know, we're still in COVID season. So it takes time, it takes perseverance, and it takes willpower to move through the ugly redemption. You have to pedal through it like you're pedaling through quicksand. That's the best analogy I can come up with, whatever. But you have to go through the motions. And that's the sucky part about the ugly redemption. The ugly redemption, again, is the reality when the hard truth hits. It's not easy. Nor is it ideal, but what's most important is once you cross that obstacle, will things get better? Are you tired of feeling a sense of negative energy around you? Perhaps you'd like to manifest abundance daily, or you want a smoke cleansing your vibe? If that's what you're about, head over to Liberated. Let me tell you a little bit more about Liberated. Liberated was founded in 2017 by yours truly, yogi, podcaster, and mom, Carla Coley, through a journey of self-exploration beyond the realms of hell. A disease of perfection inspired Carla to rebel against everything she was taught to believe about religion, socialization, and understanding. With that epiphany, Liberated was born, and it was born from a mind infused with questions on establishing a life beyond a social construct. Amidst the chaos in the world, Liberated provides peace of mind through metaphysical aspects of sage and incense. The benefits of yoga is not only art, but a self-soothing mechanism. As a fashion statement through swanky-looking yet inexpensive t-shirts and knickknacks, and a source of information through blogs on methods to keep your work in progress state of mind clear, conscious, and elevated to higher vibrations. This concoction is what makes us liberated, and this concoction is liberated. Head over to www.liberated.com. That's www.liberated.com. It's spelled LIB, the number 3, the letter R, the number 8, ED.com. That's www.liberated.com. For more information, click the link in the description box. Yes, guys, I know it's difficult to spell, but hey, we liberated. So many people that I've spoken to have changed their beautiful prison and transitioned into the ugly redemption. And the way that they handle the ugly redemption is through a book called The Four Agreements. The author of that book is Don Miguel Ruiz. And The four agreements are: one, be impeccable with your word; two, don't take anything personally; three, don't make assumptions; and four, always do your best. Everyone that I know doing their deep inner work has read this book and they follow these guidelines. I was just speaking with someone today and we both agreed that taking things personal is a big one. And we're hazardous to ourselves in that way too, where we take everything personal. I know I used to internalize and take everything personal, and now I'm just like, whatever. Okay, keep it moving. But personalizing everything is a means for disaster, because if everything that goes on around you and happens around you is personal, then that means that you're self-centered and you're only thinking about yourself. You have to step outside of the self. You have to remember that other people are having bad days. Other people might not be as chipper as you. Other people may not be as happy as you. And that's okay. Just don't take it personally when a person is not with the shit, when they don't want to be bothered, when they don't want to talk. Brush it off. It should roll off of your back like water off of a duck's back. That about wraps it up for tonight on the She Blows It podcast. I hope that you took something away from this podcast, that you learned something. Check out my references in the description box. I can't and I don't make this stuff up. And I hope you guys enjoyed the piece where I kind of married in the emotional intelligence aspect into this episode, My Teacher Doesn't Look Like Me, because that's another thing. If we can't identify with each other, then we don't necessarily know what each other needs emotionally wise, mentally, educational wise, spiritual wise, cultural wise. So thank you so much, guys, for tuning in to the show. And I'll talk to you on Monday. Bye.